The next session is, as I said, our professionalism session, dealing with professional conflict resolution, finding the middle ground amidst opposing views. So we're keeping to our theme of two sides of the same coin. We have two presenters. Jeremy Andrews will join us online. He'll set the scene for us and assist with the Q&A at the end. So Jeremy worked for 20 years in an insurer, exposed to all aspects of retirement funds, followed by 5 years as chief actuary to the FSB, and then 21 years consulting, amongst others to the FSB, the Ministry of Finance in Botswana, and the Social Security Commission in Namibia. Jeremy has acted as an expert witness in a number of matters. He served in council, the Retirement Matters Committee, the Disciplinary Committee, and currently the Public Interest Governance Committee. Corneille will then deal with the biggest part of the presentation itself, and Corneille is the MD of SNG Argent Actuarial Solutions, having joined the firm in 2010. He has 25 years of experience in the pensions consultancy, during which time he served as appointed valuator and liquidator to retirement funds, and as advisor to employers, boards of trustees, and various administrators. Corneille further acts as expert witness in road accident funds and other damages cases, and more recently, Corneille's role expanded to establishing a team of actuaries who provide solutions to auditors and corporates on the financial reporting and risk management, including credit loss calculations, fair value valuation of financial instruments, insurance reserving, and others. Corneille is a long-standing member of the Retirement Matters Committee and also of ASSA CPD Committee. He is a CFP and a fellow of both ASSA and the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. In his free time, he claims to be a DIY enthusiast, which translates to he likes fixing things that were probably not broken in the first place. So Corneille's exposure to attorneys, auditors, and other actuaries across various disciplines gives him a valuable perspective on dealing with differences in professional opinions. Thanks, Corneille. Thanks, Jeremy, first.
Good afternoon to everyone. I hope you can hear me. If Corneille, you've got the slides. We've been asked to cut down on the time, so I'm going to be as brief as I can. I think we're increasingly in litigious society where people are unhappy with things that are happening. They're raising questions. And inevitably, what this is doing is it's drawing in more than one actuary acting possibly for different principals, either a member of the board or the board and the employer. And in fact, beyond the pension fund adjudicator, the fund, etc. So what we thought we would do is to look at how one resolves the conflict that might come in that. And I hope I can indicate some practical assistance to people faced with this as to how you can avoid that conflict. Corneille's going to take us through the professional conduct standards, sources of difference, which are astonishingly wide, and then how we engage and basically how we can then avoid problems from occurring, look at some case studies, and then to talk to the benefit compromise. In the interest of time, Corneille, I'm going to hand over to you, but we'll cover all of these as we get there, and hopefully we'll have some engagement with the audience on the case studies. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, Warren Buffett managed to capture the essence of this entire session in one quote. The best way to resolve conflict is to avoid them in the first place. Now, if only it was that easy, in our daily lives we come across instances, not necessarily conflict, but differences which has the potential of escalating into conflict. And depending on your role, where you find yourself in life, you might deal with that problem very differently. Two bouncers outside a club, they won't negotiate the merits of the case. They'll just move straight on to the conflict. That's one way of dealing with it. Maybe if you have two attorneys in court, they will start at a point, and I'll take a point, and then you'll take that point, and I'll take that point, and they'll just move further and further apart until eventually the judge makes the ruling. There's almost no intention to find a compromise or a middle ground, unless it's outside the steps of court where they miraculously find the middle ground. I hope my audit partners who joined me is not going to judge me for this. Auditors don't really care what you think. They're there to install what they believe is the right position. They're not there to negotiate. They're going to tell you what they believe the right answer is. I'm exaggerating a little bit for dramatic effect, but I think I see nods in the audience. You know what I'm talking about. And then maybe the one that we can aspire to is the medical profession. They would tend to get a second or third opinion in, maybe because the risks are so large, you don't want to kill someone by getting it wrong. And similarly, maybe because liability is so high, if you get it wrong and kill someone, you're ruined. So maybe we can learn a little bit from that. So where does that leave actuaries in resolving differences? Now, our professional conduct standards will guide us a little bit towards that. And if you look at what that says, it's pretty clear and straight to the point. It talks about basic behaviors. It doesn't talk to conflict resolution per se. It says act with honesty, act with integrity, act with competence and due care. That's nothing new to what we are expected to do. It then also goes on to talk about the fact that differences can arise. We're not naive to think that actuaries will not differ. When that does happen, it is important that you engage, that you articulate your differences, and you make an effort to resolve it. And finally, it goes on to explain the need for actuaries to consult. Jeremy just mentioned the scenario where we often find ourselves advising the same client on the same matter from two different angles. And again, the professional conduct standards are not blind to that, and says when you're in that position, just handle it carefully. Basically, in plain language, just play nice. Now, if we were able to do all of that well, why would there ever be any conflict? If you think about it, we all have the same training. If you have the same data set in front of you, the same scenario, the same problem statement, why would we come up with different answers? It's a good question. I don't know what the answer is, but it happens, and we all know that it happens almost on a daily basis. Now, in my work, as we explained earlier, I work with the auditors where my mandate is literally to go and find mistakes in your work. You hopefully understand where I'm coming from. It's just a job. And hopefully I haven't had too many bad conflict situations there. We tend to resolve it quite easily. In another life of mine where I do damages work, it's even more confrontational by nature. You set out all guns blazing pretty much the opposing parties. But surprisingly, there's not much conflict between the actuaries. And I think it's because it's such a structured environment. Everybody knows exactly what his role is or should be. And you pretty much play by the rules of the attorneys, and you just crunch the numbers. So that's also as confrontational as the court system should be or is expected to be. It's pretty easy for an actuary to handle. That was my experience. Now a bit closer to home, the pensions environment. You would think how much confrontation should there be, because we're all on the same wicket. As the previous speaker said, we're all there for the benefit of the members. Why would we come up with different answers that could escalate into conflict? And if you think that that ever happens, you've never been in a 15C dispute where everybody wants a piece of that pie. So we do find ourselves regularly in that position. So what I've done on this slide is just listed a couple of very generic scenarios where conflict can arise. And maybe that heading is a little bit too dramatic. It's not potential sources of conflict, it's potential sources of difference, different answers, which has the potential of escalating into conflict. So we start with the easiest one first, just a straight old error. And you'd be surprised how many of those we find, whether it's a spreadsheet error or typo in your report. Do not go down the track of trying to defend your position or make technical arguments before you've double-checked your work. Just make sure the numbers that's being reviewed is correct. It's as easy as that. Fix the problem, and we all move along. Next one, also fairly easy to resolve, is incorrect or incomplete information. If you don't have the same data set in front of you, you're going to come to different answers through nobody's fault. So before you start arguing, just make sure that you are on the same page. Slightly more vague than that is if you have all the same data, but a slightly different angle on what you know. You may have a little bit more information or insight on the operation of this board, or maybe some institutional knowledge which puts you in an advantage relative to the other actuary. So before you go into extrapolating differences and making big comments, just make sure that everybody's on the same page, and that comes to the argument of transparency that the BCS expects of us. So get everybody on the same page, and then the similar answer should hopefully follow. Now, next one is different scopes of work. Now, that can become tricky. We mentioned that earlier, where you have different roles specifically. You may be appointed by the employer to bat for him, and then there's nothing wrong in explaining or highlighting to the employer what is the best possible outcome for him. Or if you are employed by maybe a pensioners group, to say, please tell us how much of this surplus belongs to us, you're going to give them the arguments that suits their benefit. But, and that's a very big but, just be sure that you clarify that there are two sides of that to that coin. Don't disregard the other view. Don't hide the other view. Put everything on the table and allow the people to understand that my advice to you is I would like you to get the best possible cut out of this, but know that there's an answer to this end of the range as well. And be clear about that. And when you and the other actuary comes together, you can present both those positions, and it doesn't make the one actuary right and the other one wrong. It's just two sets of opinions on a range or a scale, a spectrum of potential answers. Are there roles or mandates that can cause differences of results? Is whether you're acting within a certain corporate where you are bound by their house views. It may not be your view necessarily, but you kind of need to follow it. Or you are working for the regulator and you need to follow the regulator's rules while everybody around you is trying to find practical solutions to very difficult problems. That doesn't make you wrong or right. It leads to conflict, and I can see a big smile coming from Julia there. I tried not to mention names, but it is a reality, and we'll get Julia on the podium later. It's a reality. She has a specific role to fill, and in that role, there's certain expectations, certain rules of engagement that just makes it very difficult for the other party to understand. But that does not mean it needs to escalate to conflict. It's just a different role. And as long as there's an understanding of what my role is, what your role is, and what we both set out to do, then you should find common ground towards the end. Now, these were supposed to be the easier ones. Let's get into the more difficult areas. Professional judgment. Now, what we do on a daily basis very often doesn't have, almost never, has a very straight yes or no answer, black or white answer. We deal with grey areas. That's what we do for a living. And the people out there don't often understand it. Don't even talk about attorneys or auditors. They don't deal well with black and with grey. They like black and white. So it's our job to clarify that grayness and find a middle ground where we can tell them this is an answer that sits within, again, a spectrum of potential answers, but this is the best one under circumstances. If I come to you with things like medical inflation, if I say it's inflation plus one and you say it's inflation plus two, who's to say who's right or wrong? To now pick up a big fight and trying to prove my point because my house view is X, you're not going to win anything through that engagement. So maybe the answer is just meet in the middle ground. Just split it halfway and say, your answer is okay, my answer is okay, let's move on. Maybe understand the quantum of the impact of what you're talking about and just let it be. Pick the battles. That's maybe professional judgment when there is no clear right or wrong. You don't need to always try to stand your ground. As I said, in increasing order of complexity, bias. Whether it's intentional or unintentional bias, intentional bias is almost easier to handle. That's the kind of thing where you have a specific mandate and you specifically are batting for one team or the other, and everybody knows that's where you're standing. That's probably easier to handle. The unintentional bias is a very difficult one to handle because the one actually may just naturally have a much more conservative outlook on things. Just in nature, the car he drives, the clothes he wears, he's a more conservative person. Whereas the other actuary might be more ambitious, and because of that simple mindset difference, they come up with different answers. And when you're so vested in your view, it's very difficult to almost understand how the other one can think like that. Why would you drive that car? Why would you think this or that about this assumption? And that's very difficult to find a middle ground because people are very loath to move off. It's almost a value system thing. So this is very difficult to solve. And in that instance, often the answer is to get a third party involved, get some arbitrator or mediation involved, or someone else to just say, come on, you have to step off your holy ground. It doesn't always have to be like that. But that is the trigger for confrontation because now someone won the battle and someone lost the battle. So this is a tricky one without a very clear answer. Last one, interpretation of facts. As I said right at the beginning, you would think that we all have the same act in front of us, the same rules, the same circumstances. How can we come up with different answers? It happens every day. I don't understand why, but it happens. So I think they also try to understand the other person's point of view. Try to accommodate him and think about it from his point of view. Why does he have this firm idea that this is what the Act says, and I'm not reading it like that. And then, believe it or not, you may actually need legal opinion. Because if you really can't budge on that one, because if you firmly believe that what this guy is wanting me to do is against the law, against regulations, or against principles, then you can't budge on that. So certain things are non-negotiable. And if you get to that point, unfortunately, legal recourse may be the only solution. So whatever the source of difference, this is by no means an exhaustive list. This is just stuff that I picked up through my career of the typical things where differences lie. And those differences, if not handled correctly, can escalate into conflict. And as I said, I pointed up a couple of my personal pointers of how I think some of it can be resolved or how it should be handled differently, depending on circumstances. But all in all, there's some very basic rules of engagement that I think one should just keep in mind. It's not going to solve the problem, but it's not going to make it worse. So that's the most we can ask when we get into a confrontational position, prevent it from escalating. Again, I'm going to start with the PCS basic principle words like courtesy, respect, honesty, transparency, humility, flexibility. Take any of those out of the equation and suddenly things just ramp up. If the one person brings his arrogance to the table as opposed to humility, the other person almost has to dig in his heels and say, you're not going to bully me. It just takes the whole discussion down the wrong road. Now, this is the basic kind of human behavior things that your mom should have taught you probably many years ago. You don't need a PCS to tell you to be civil. But if you don't do that, and it's surprising how often discussions can unravel in a professional environment. So let's avoid that. I think it goes without saying. Next one, do not confuse the client. If two actuaries can't come to a solution, then how can you expect a poor client to be given two positions and he needs to make a call? It does a great deal of disrespect to our profession, because we try to position ourselves as the ones who can bring solutions. We can look through complexity and see the magic answer beneath it all. If two of us sit around a table and we can't find a solution, what taste does that leave to the client? So don't confuse the client by getting involved in technical discussions where all he sees is bickering. Maybe resolve those issues behind the scenes, come to common ground. By the time you get to the client, tell him this is the conclusion that we arrived at. By all means, do share the road to that conclusion with him. He needs to be informed that there are different views. You can't position it to him and almost bully him into a single answer. He needs to be informed to some extent. But don't confuse him. That adds no value to the discussion. Then one that I mentioned earlier is pick the battles worth fighting. Sometimes don't fight just for the sake of proving a point or proving that you're right. If there's one minor assumption, I don't know, the withdrawal decrement between age 35 and 40, who cares? Do the maths and quantify it and say, you know what, this has a 0.1% difference to the total answer. Let's start having that debate about medical inflation. Let's have that debate about some other thing that actually is the crux of the problem. So if you can identify the crux of the problem very early, it's going to avoid a lot of time and energy wasted on fighting battles that's not worth fighting, which then has the risk of turning into disrespect or all those other nasty things, and the risk of confusing your client. And then the last one there is, if at all possible, avoid working via third parties. The best possible chance of a solution is two actuaries sitting around the table with a intent to resolve it. As soon as you get a third party involved, whether it's a trustee with a specific mindset or a specific message that he wants to enforce, or maybe another service provider who maybe needs to protect his wickets or has a specific agenda, and heaven forbid, maybe an attorney coming involved who does what attorneys do, you don't want that, because that clouds everything. The entire dynamics of the discussion changes when a third party enters the room. Because suddenly, if you're in front of your client and you're being challenged by another actuary, you kind of have to put up a brave face and not concede too much, because you're going to come across as weak. You have to pretend that you're the smartest one in the room, because maybe he's going to appoint the other guy next time. So I think when third parties becomes involved, it's becoming very difficult to maintain the rules of engagement. So try to work without them in the room. I'm not saying do it behind their backs, and we can have a discussion around that maybe in Q&A. Where do you draw the line between kind of giving a little black box and say they're not going to understand anyway? And when do you involve third parties? There's a fine line there. But I'm just saying, as far as conflict resolution is concerned, if you get third parties involved, chances are much, much greater that it's going to get out of hand. So I've rushed through this as quickly as I can. I don't want to go into examples or any details in what we were in this very, very simple presentation that I presented here, because I think the biggest value comes from real-life experience. These fuzzy things that we're talking about, that's always topical in a professionalism session, it's not right or wrong. There's no textbook about it. We weren't taught this at varsity. It's about experience, and some people got it right, some people got it wrong. And with Jeremy around, hopefully he got it right more than wrong. But in such a long career, I think we can look to him for some wisdom and experience on what can go wrong or what can go right in these circumstances. But before I hand over to Jeremy, just a disclaimer that the names and changes have been changed to protect the innocent. Let's keep it anonymous. Some of the cases being discussed are actually still sub judice. So let's keep it anonymous. Let's keep it civil. Let's not come and wash dirty laundry here. And on that, I'm going to hand over to Jeremy with a quick practical guide of how do we actually implement all of this.
Thanks very much. What I'd like to really focus on is something that ends up being called the expert minute. But inevitably, in many of these cases, you've got differences which you can identify of data or method or model that you've used and the assumptions that you've used. If you can, in fact, identify those and quantify and agree the results with the actuary on, if you like to put it on the other side, then what you can do is identify then where you disagree and why, and motivate your choice of your particular approach compared to hers, for example, and you express the result in the expert minute which you agree. So essentially what can go forward is, in a court it's called an expert minute, but it's effectively a matter of saying, these are the differences, this is the financial impact of those differences, we agree how you get there. So you don't have to take a court through, and I don't know if any of you have had the awful duty to try and take a judge who knows nothing about actuarial work how you do an actuarial calculation. But it's very difficult, made more so by the various lawyers who keep interrupting you deliberately to try and break your ability to tell a story. But if you've now got an expert minute which has put this together and said, this is how, these are numbers that we agree depending on the differences, and you focus the attention on those differences. The client might be a board of trustees, it might be a court, it might be the pension fund adjudicator, can then decide depending on how they read the motivations that you've presented to them. And this, to my mind, actually, first of all, by focusing on data, method, models, assumptions, on those differences and your motivation, you take it out of the personal. So you're no longer talking about other Miss Actuary next to you who's done a dreadful job. You're now essentially saying, this is why I disagree, for example, with Miss Actuary's assumption on such and such. And that way you can, in my experience anyway, you can keep the matter at a professional level, and you significantly reduce, if you're in court, the dangers associated with cross-examination and somehow contradicting yourself, which then enables them to climb in and tear apart what you've done. Cornet, do you want to go into some examples now or not? How would that suit you?
I think I'm switched off. There you go. Yeah, please do go into some examples, okay, if you mind.
All right, thanks. Well, the first one I'd like to take was a defined benefit fund. A member and the board of the fund disputed the benefit that he'd received. Now, the benefit structure obviously depended on, well, not obviously, but in this particular case, depended on your status. He alleged he was a senior executive. The fund felt he wasn't. And then it was a question of what was his pensionable remuneration? Was it a basic salary? Did it include various allowances? And what I did with the other actuary involved, we quantified basically the impact of each of the alternatives and presented that in an expert minute. Only one of us gave evidence because we were asked to take the court through the expert minute. The court then decided what was the status of the member, what were his earnings, and out came the result. And we were, in fact, as actuaries, very satisfied with the outcome. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. And when it can get ugly, I have to use the word ego. Most of us have come through the our school and examination system and qualification with quite a high opinion of our abilities. And when I was at the Financial Services Board, as it was then, a newly appointed valuator came through with a valuation result which was dramatically different from the previous actuary's result in the prior valuation. And effectively, the new fund valuator was saying, this is my view, my decision to take. And we then had to challenge that. And it unfortunately got very ugly with the solution to the problem was simply for that actuary to present the evidence on which they had based their particular approach to this valuation. And in fact, I think ultimately it probably could have been demonstrated, but wasn't. And unfortunately, the minute you attack, and I'm not sure, I believe Julia's in the audience, my experience at the regulator was that sometimes you get fed very little information. And what would be extremely helpful is if you were given significantly more information that justifies the particular approach taken. Corne, do you want to throw some things in?
Yeah, if I can maybe just add to that, on those basic rules of engagement, your first example was a simple one where there's a simple solution. It's not our call to make. If we can quantify the differences and understand the differences, and then leave it to a judge to make the call, because he'll have the facts in front of him. So that's pretty easy. We don't need to fight about it because there's no wrong or right. So I think that's a nice, simple example to start with. Mm. Next one, much less so, but still, if you had that upfront transparency, I talked about incomplete information. If there was a willingness between both parties to resolve it, as opposed to digging in my heels, I'm the valuator, it's my call, it could have been avoided. The nastiness that you said followed could have been avoided altogether. So I think, again, it's just evidence of how basic rules of engagement can avoid the thing escalating. There will be differences, but in that specific instance, get the empirical evidence to speak for itself. And if that doesn't exist, let common sense prevail. But to fight for the sake of, argue for the sake of arguing, to make a point because by law I'm the valuator, I have the right to make this call, that doesn't win you any friends, and you're not going to win the battle like that. And in the end, after I don't know how many months it was, Jeremy, you find the conclusion was actually in the numbers, and it was easy for everybody to walk away from that.
Absolutely. Can I give you an example of intentional bias? I attended a conference, in fact, in with the Institute of Actuaries, and a chap had got up, and he was talking about how completely unaffordable aspects of the current social security system was. And then the next speaker got up and he said, I'm with the International Labour Organization. And he said, we believe that it is that social security is a right. And then proceeded to speak. So right there, we had exposed a point of view was saying affordability, in fact, didn't matter at all. There were other priorities. And I think we have to be very careful of, if I describe them as almost political differences. I mean, I was told once I was intellectually blinkered because I couldn't understand why the other side was taking the position they were. In fact, it was entirely an emotional response to a lot of bad things that had happened. So I think we do have to be very sensitive, or try to be, as to where the other side is coming from. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeremy. I think before, I'm sure Jeremy's got a whole number of other examples up his sleeve, but the reason we kept the presentation short is, as I said, with these fuzzy things, it's about learning from each other. It's about getting best practice and getting everybody else's learnings shared so that we can know what to do right or wrong. So I would like to open the floor for discussion, comments, questions. This list of examples or instances that I mentioned, if anyone wants to add to that as typical scenarios that we haven't addressed here, that's very important to address. Or maybe an example of something going right or wrong from the floor.
I don't know if it's afternoon already, it's still morning. We started so early. Afternoon. Good afternoon to the speakers. I think the comment that Jeremy made, it's Rusani, Jeremy, a familiar voice to you. You mentioned something. You said sometimes the views are premised on an emotional response to a lot of things that have happened. When I was looking at your list of issues, if you could perhaps go to that slide. I would have ventured to add another one, which is a dimension that Jeremy introduced, where it's not just the interpretation of facts, legislation, and guidance. It's where you're actually creating new legislation or new guidance and so on. Hopefully, not new facts, but obviously maybe considering a whole new set of facts, perhaps. So you can imagine that space is a lot wider. There's a very little certainty. And, I mean, as actuaries, I think we do better where we could agree on facts, and there are some guidance, even though we may interpret it a little bit differently. But in areas where we're dealing with a new dynamic and all of that, I think it makes it very difficult to even find each other. So I'm not sure if I were to then put that to you, this scenario that I've added, how do you think we could go about it? Because I think that is a bit more difficult.
Yes, that is really difficult because we are so used to working within a specific framework. Excuse me. Once you have a framework, you can work within that and you know what your boundaries are and you know what the limitations are. To set those boundaries, it's as open as anything. So I guess the same principles again. Let's go through those, because you're going to be in dispute with various different parties, with all different stakeholders. Now it's each man for himself. So Labour would want certain things in the regulation. Business will want something else. Government will want something else. The administrators will want something else. You're going to have so many people tugging in different directions. To put all of those together, sure, it is difficult. And I think back to the rules of engagement. Keep it courteous, professional, because at least take that off the table. Don't start screaming and shouting at each other. And get other actuaries to support you in what you're doing. Maybe that's where I'm leaning towards. If you as an actuary are put in that position, it's actually a little bit unfair on the actuary. It's not in your capacity as actuary that you're there. Necessarily. But if you can get other actuaries to support you in that, I think it will strengthen your hand. And if you can stand up, if you start bickering amongst yourselves between the actuaries, then you're in a bad place. But that's kind of, Jeremy, I don't know if you have any better insights.
No. One thing I would say, though, is that if you quantify what the demand is, for example, let's say it's Labour making a particular demand, if you're able to quantify that and then it may be that the result is a number that surprises, for example, then maybe they would change their views. But people will have very strong feelings about things, and it's only perhaps when they have to make the choices as to how one disposes of limited resources that you get to some resolution of that. And I think particularly in the whole health insurance debate at the moment, and I'm sorry to be very contentious, but I think that we're going to have to be very sensitive to where a number of parties are coming from who want national health insurance to actually help quantify it, quantify the effect, quantify the results of different benefit packages, and let everyone see what the outcome of that is. Sorry to raise that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, following on from that, stick to what you know. If it's about quantifying and analyzing and giving the empirical evidence the support for the decision makers, you don't need to be the one that solves it, depending on your role, obviously. But if as actuary you come with the numbers and all the right facts, don't get emotionally involved. And if the decision needs to be made at a political level, then so be it. Then you've done your part. So I think to try and be everything to everybody might also be a bit of a dangerous place to be. Any easier questions than that one? Here, anything from the online people? Okay, I think everybody's hungry then. And so I think I'm going to wrap up then. I think we don't need to belabor the point. It's a very simple concept. It's a very simple talk. There's not much to it. It's just play nicely. And if you do it right, it's to everybody's benefit. If you act civil, it's the best chance of coming a solution to everybody's benefit. Starting with your, let's get back to the right slide. Starting with your stakeholders, what they think of the profession. If you come up with different answers, you are putting a discredit on the profession as a whole. Moving from your original position does not mean that you lost. Check the egos at the door. Easier said than done, but unfortunately, ego and self-preservation has a lot to do with these engagement starts. Forget about that and get to the right answer for the member, for the client, whoever that client might be. Just changing your stance doesn't mean that you've lost. It means that together you came up with a better answer. And then I mentioned that presenting the client with contradicting views and no solution results in distrust to the entire profession. If we can't come up with a solution, who is going to do so? And if we had the opportunity to do so, why do you want to wait until legal people get involved? So, and then what I answered earlier is two independent actuaries presenting a joint front puts both of you in a much stronger position to stand up to any challenge. That's back to the medical example. Two doctors will get a third opinion in just to be sure they don't get sued if something goes wrong. If you have the backing of a second actuary, even if you started at opposing views, but you find a common ground and you conclude on something that's acceptable to both, if that decision is then challenged, whether it's by an adjudicator, by a law, by a member, by whoever wants to challenge your decision, or even a third actuary for that matter, of the two of you can say, we have worked meticulously through all the information, used everything at our disposal, and came up with the best possible answer. That is going to protect you. And so it protects your client, it protects you, it protects the industry as a whole, the profession as a whole. So if you can resolve these conflicts, by all means, it's a win-win for all. And then if I can close on the single takeaway, keep the lawyers out of it. Thank you.
Any final comment or question before lunch? Nothing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Corneille, Jeremy. Appreciate your time taking us through that difficult topic.